Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay and Misty Hall tonight for the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is our hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. And each week, Misty and I discuss different issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. And if you are one of those women, hopefully you're listening to us so that you can have a better understanding about what your situation is and how you can move on in your life. Misty and I are really good at getting people to move along. Right, Misty?
I think so. I think we're the best in the field. But of course, that's my opinion. We work with a lot of women, and we see a lot of good results. So,
yes, we do. We work with some of the best women anybody could imagine. And
absolutely.
To all of our listeners, you know, we shout a big hello to you. And it's a special day that, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about Father's Day in one moment. I just want to give people the call-in number in case you would like to call and make any comments or have any discussion. It's area code 646-716-4893. And I'll repeat that again. Area code 646-716-4893. Because Misty and I always like to hear your stories, how you're coping, or whatever questions that you have. So, Misty, today is a very special day for men all over America, Father's Day, and you wanted to talk a little bit about your father, right?
Absolutely. I thought it would be very fitting. Today is a very special day, and, you know, as you said earlier, we do. We work with a lot of women, and we've discussed on this show and among ourselves and in your support chat, how that support is so important during this discovery of when you learn that your husband is gay or bisexual. You know, you really need the support. And we talk about that a lot, how important it is. And I just like to think, since today is Father's Day, I'd like to point out that, you know, don't underestimate the value of your parents and the support they can give you if they're still living. Unfortunately, I know some of our women we work with, you know, their parents have passed on. But with me, in my case, my parents were, you know, still on the face of this earth with me, and I didn't want to go to them. I was scared. You know, I was in my 20s, I was young, and I didn't want to tell them about my discovery of my then husband being gay. I was afraid, I was ashamed, and most of all, I didn't think they would understand. You know, because mind you, I grew up in Eastern Kentucky, in the Appalachian Mountains, and, you know, of course, a lot of people have bad stereotypes of that area anyway, which I think they're all not true, but, you know, I didn't think my parents would be open-minded enough to understand, and, of course, I think that is universal. Oftentimes, the children think they're smarter than the parents sometimes, and I guess I'm guilty of that as well, but I just wanted to say, don't underestimate the support your parents can give you. And my dad, he just gave, both of my parents did. But because today is Father's Day, I really want to highlight and thank him for all he did. You know, I went to my parents and I told them. I told them that I had found out my then husband was gay. He was abusive. And I had
to
get out of
the marriage. How long did the marriage take you to tell them that, Misty?
It took over 10 years, Bonnie. It took over 10 years, and you know when I told them? I'll never forget. I told them the night before I went to file for divorce.
Wow.
I couldn't get the funds without my ex-husband knowing what I was doing. So I had to go to them to borrow the money, and by doing that, I wasn't going to say, okay, give me a $10,000 retainer fee, but I'm not going to tell you what it's for. You know,
mm-hmm.
I knew I had to tell them what I needed the money for, and I knew if they could help me, they would. So I remember when I told them, I remember exactly where I was, where I was standing. And because of the abuse, and not all gay straight marriages have abuse in them. Mine did. And due to the abuse, I had to keep the divorce a secret. And I had put off telling them the abuse and my suspicion for years. But it came to the point I had to tell him because I needed to borrow money from a source that my gay ex-husband wouldn't know, you know, any of the information. So my dad had been in a terrible, terrible car wreck that nearly cost him his life. And he was actually in a hospital bed in the middle of our family room. And I told my mother first. I wanted to tell her first because I knew my dad was not doing well. He was, you know, at this point in time, we knew he was going to live. He was just in a lot of pain. And I thought, well, I'm going to tell her first so that way she can help me with him, you know, because I didn't think he was going to handle this well. So I told her. She nearly passed out. And she gathered her senses, and I said, okay, we've got to go tell Dad. So I went. We walked to the family room where my dad was laying in his hospital bed recovering from his near-fatal car accident. And I told him. I told them all the whole scoop. I said, you know, I said, my now ex-husband, I said, he's gay. I have to get divorced. I have an appointment with a divorce attorney tomorrow. I need $10,000, and I can't fix this. He's abusive. And, you know, I just went on to tell them the whole story. Of course, it wasn't easy. Telling my parents was the hardest thing I did. And let me tell you, it was the best thing I did. My parents, they are religious people. They go, you know, they belong to a conservative church. And what I loved about them was they realized this was a situation that couldn't be fixed. It was broken. They did not even once try to question me. They trusted my judgment. And the only thing they said was, well, why did you stay so long?
Mm-hmm.
Which that just, you know, it just helped me so much. It validated everything that I'd go through. And, you know, they did have their suspicions that he was gay, which I never thought they did. Of course, lots of people have that, I suppose, because, you know, a straight wife is usually the last one to find this stuff out anyway. So they did have their suspicions. And they did not have the suspicions about the abuse. I hid the abuse very, very well. And I think that a lot of our straight wives and wives across the United States in straight marriages hide abuse well, and that's not a good thing to do. So they were just so supportive. I just can't stress that enough. And on this Father's Day, I'd really like to thank my dad for, you know, and my mom, but especially him, since it's Father's Day, for just, you know, they took me back under their wing. They protected me. They did all they could. They supported me. And even though we don't see eye to eye on everything, they completely understood what I needed them to understand, that this was not fixable, it was broken, and I needed to get out of it. And they supported me, not 100%. They supported me 200%. And it was wonderful. It was a wonderful experience, and I got to rebond with them. Because when you're in an abusive marriage like I was, you have to remember, my ex, I allowed him to pull him away from us, to pull me away from my family. So
I think that's very common when you're married to a gay man. They're trying to isolate you from your family because they're afraid somebody's going to know the truth.
Absolutely. I was completely isolated from my family. And my dad being in that near-fatal car wreck was almost a blessing because I was there helping my mother care for him. So it pulled me out of such a dangerous situation and put me back home with them to help nurse him back to health. And that's when I started discovering things. That's when I discovered while I was away helping take care of my dad, that's when my now ex had moved his boyfriend into the house, you know, just things like that. So, you know, it was a wonderful experience to be able to reconnect with my parents and to have that love and support. And oftentimes, you know, well, we coach these straight wives. Oftentimes they think their parents cannot handle this type of information. And, Bonnie, what I say is if you have a good relationship with your parents, most oftentimes your parents can understand a lot more than you think they can.
Mm-hmm.
And I just tell you, when I let them know the truth, when I quit hiding everything in the closet, this huge burden was lifted off of me, and they helped support me, like I said, 200%. So don't underestimate the support in your family if you have that loving relationship with parents. It's wonderful.
And I think that really means a lot. And I think the sad thing, though, is we've discovered through the years is that a lot of women don't have positive relationships with their fathers and as a result end up in a, you know, repeating the same mistake in their own marriages. But, you know, certainly, even if it's not a father, sometimes you're close to a mother. I know that my mother was very supportive of me.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, she gave me every encouragement to leave the marriage. And and I wanted to also bring up the point, because we are talking about fathers today, that I like to talk, you know, to remind women that there are some wonderful gay ex-husbands out there who really are wonderful fathers. Excuse me. We certainly know enough about the ones who aren't, but I really like to salute those who are, you know, who realize they've made a mistake, that they come to terms with whom they are, and that they just don't run off, that they take responsibility. They're involved with raising their children and supporting their children, and there are many gay men out there who do that as well. You know, and like I say, it's important for you, if you are a gay man, to realize that just because your life has changed, it doesn't mean that the needs of your family has changed. A gay man really needs to understand that importance of being responsible to their families, even if they're out there finding themselves or leading their own lives. Unfortunately, you know, we run into many cases where that's not happening. But I do want to mention to people that it's not a necessarily a gay thing, because I come from a horrible father, and he was a straight man. I mean, it can, you know, I think a lot of times it's just the nature of men itself that, you know, like I say, they're neglectful. They move on to another life and they leave their children behind. Certainly that was the case with my father. So I think for those of us who lacked a real father figure, you know, in our need to find love, that we're willing to look anywhere to anybody who's willing to give it to us, which is why we really make bad choices a lot of times. Because, first of all, we don't really know a lot of times what a stable, loving relationship should be like, because we haven't had one. And often we come from families where there are a lot, you know, there is a lot of dysfunction, especially in the marriage. And it doesn't have to be a gay thing. But if you don't feel good about yourself when you find a partner, you know, you don't look into the important things in that relationship. You're just so happy to have somebody to love you on the outside without looking at all the implications that are going to happen on the inside. So, once again, I just wanted to mention that this happens, you know, to people all the time, whether they're straight, gay, or otherwise. And it's just so important to be able to have positive parenting regardless of sexuality. I think it makes a total difference in what happens to you in your life, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. You know, that while you were saying that, the biggest thing that kept coming to my mind while you were making that description was, you know, whether you come from a family that's divorced from straight people, or you come from a family that's divorced from a gay straight parent, regardless of you know, your sexuality, when you divorce a spouse, you do not divorce the children.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the children's place to bear the responsibility of the pain in the marriage. So, you know, as adults, you have to seek support for your pain, but show up and be a parent, regardless of who or what you are. You know, you don't divorce the children. Give them the love, the support that they need. Because, you know, Bonnie, we know that, you know, some of the women we work with don't want to get out of the marriage because they think it's better
mm-hmm.
to keep a marriage intact. And you and I both know that's not necessarily true if there's conflict in the home. So, you know, look at it as a new beginning and figure out how to redefine your family when the separation and divorce process starts, and be a good father, be a good mother. You know, that doesn't discount as a straight wife the pain discovering that your ex-husband is gay. I'm not discounting that at all. We know that hurts. But remember, the children don't need to carry the burden of the pain, and don't divorce your children. That's my biggest message today. You know, just don't divorce your children.
Right. And be responsible to them. You know, a lot of times,
absolutely,
I think divorce under all circumstances is so difficult.
And, mm-hmm.
you know, children just don't understand why all of a sudden the father's abandoning them. And so that's why I think it is very important for men to understand this, regardless of your sexuality, that it's really important to, you know, stay a responsible father and to do the right thing by your ex-wife. You know, I always tell men, like when they say to me, I don't know how I can do it, it's going to be so hard. Yes, it is. It's going to be the hardest thing in the world that you've ever done, is being honest with your wife and coming and telling her this truth. I never minimize it, because I just can't imagine anything that would be more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, once again, you have to do what you have to do. But that doesn't mean that after you do it, that's it. I mean, that's just the beginning. Finding, you know, like I said, being a support to your family is really important after this news comes out, so that your wife isn't left to struggle with this alone. And that, you know, once again, she has the support of the husband. So we do salute all gay men who are gay fathers who are doing the right things by their children and by their ex-wives. And we strongly do encourage those who are staying in these marriages to really rethink it, because what favor are you doing to your child when you're setting an example of a marriage that's really not a real marriage? And I think, you know, when we talk a lot to Misty about men being in denial, and I think about this a lot because I have this conversation a lot with different gay men and who are married, and a lot of them saying, well, I don't really think I'm gay. I mean, I really do understand it, you know, on a certain level. Excuse me. And the level I understand it on is that when gay men who are able to have a wife, have a family, perform heterosexual sex to some degree, at least, you know, in the beginning parts of the marriage, when they look on television and they see the stereotypical gay man, they can't relate to that. They really don't believe that's who they are. So it's easy for them to just feel, well, I'm not gay, because if I were gay, I'd be like that, and I'm not. Mm-hmm. So, once again, I do understand a lot of times why it takes time to come to terms with yourself and to understand who you are. But I really do feel that once you start acting on it, then you don't have to wonder anymore. You already know. And so that's the point where you need to be honest with your family. So those are my thoughts, you know, and I think that most of us would agree with that, wouldn't you say so?
I agree with it. I completely agree. You know, we, like you and I both say, Bonnie, you know, there's not a choice in who you prefer sexually, man or woman, but there are choices when there comes time to tell the truth and bring the truth to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, truth is not always the easiest route, but as you and I both know, truth is the healthiest route. Keeping secrets is not healthy for either side. It's not healthy for the gay husband trying to maintain a facade of being straight, and it's certainly not healthy for the straight wife keep wondering what she's doing wrong and how can she make things better because she knows her marriage is a mess. And one thing I think is also important to touch on, I think a lot of gay men think they are doing their straight wife a favor by not telling them. They think they hurt them more. And Bonnie, you and I both know that's not always the case. Usually more damage is done the longer the secret is kept. And I think they need to, you know, speak up. The truth hurts. But speak up and let people live in the truth. It's just more healing, you know,
mm-hmm.
than trying to hide the things behind the closet door. It's just better for everyone. And truth can be painful, but in this type of situation, I think it's necessary. And oftentimes when the straight wife figures out the truth, so many pieces of the puzzle begin to fit together.
Well, I think this is just, like I say, such a complex situation, you know, that, of course, there's no easy answers. I mean, they seem easier to us because we're out of it for a while. And when you're able to have hindsight, you know, that's certainly the easiest sight to have. But I know that, you know, we were talking tonight in our chat room about this one woman who I know, and, excuse me, you know, it was, you know, here's a woman who's married to a straight man who's just horrible, and, you know, she has every opportunity to leave that marriage, and whenever I talk to her, you know, she's never happy, you know, she's always complaining about her husband, but she stays, and, you know, I say to her, you know, I don't understand why you're staying, you know, all these years, like 35 years already. And there's always a million excuses, you know, or people's values are different. I don't talk to her really about it anymore because she's made it clear to me that she has no intention of leaving because she's not willing to give up her home. She's not willing to give up her lifestyle. So she measures it out and she weighs it out and she feels that, you know, she's happier this way than if she had to make it on her own. So, you know, first of all, I just want women to know that we're not judging you. If you choose to stay in your marriage and you'd rather be unhappy, you know, who are we to tell you, no, you have to be happy and do the right thing. But, you know, it's like her children grew up screwed up because they heard constant tension in the home. It had nothing to do with a gay husband. and the children can't stand the husband, and they have bad relationships of their own. So it is a legacy that just keeps getting passed down.
Mm-hmm.
The longer you stay.
I agree.
And
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just wanted to mention that in one of my newsletters, I was just able to find it now. I wrote a note that my mother had sent to me, and I wanted to read this to people. Because, once again, as Misty says, you know, having the support of a parent, I think, is the most important thing. And, you know, if you can get it, I think it's the best thing that could ever happen. Because, you know, you need somebody to give you support during this time. And, excuse me, this is what my mother wrote to me after my divorce came through. And, I mean, this just shows you the character of my mother, who unfortunately passed away 10 years ago at the age of 67. But she wrote, "Dearest Bonnie, this is not the funny card I was going to send, but instead one of the color of sunshine, the sun bringing to mind that whatever happens to people, joys, tears, health, sickness, weddings, or divorce, the sun always rises, bringing new life, spirit, and vitality to the world. Remembering the words on this joyous occasion from the first time, those occasions change, and we do the best we can to look ahead to brighter days and happier times. Divorce is a finality and a conclusion to a mistake. You should be proud that you brought this to an end from a legal standpoint and a moral standpoint. Your children will someday admire your decision as to not divorce, but know if his life would lower their feelings of strength they see in you and count on for their future. Someday they may have to accept his failings, but never your weakness. My life, in limbo all these years to suit your father's fancy, has been unproductive, restrictive, and foolish on my part. Now it is too late to recapture my years, but I'm comforted in the fact that you face a free new road. Enjoy your freedom and strength. I am proud of you always. Love, Mommy."
Wow. Isn't
that beautiful?
That is beautiful. What a legacy she was able to write out and leave for you that still is very meaningful today about choices you made to move on. That's beautiful.
I know, and it really made me think about, you know, what she said. It's true that my mother spent so many of her own years in limbo, living in a destructive relationship, not to a gay man, but to a straight man, always
mm-hmm.
trying to make things work, always trying to keep us as a family. And it really was destructive because we grew up in an environment where there was always fighting and tension, cheating.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the way I grew up. You know, I thought that was the way of the world. I didn't know any differently. And I really
took
that to my unsuccessful marriages. I'll add an S to it because my gay husband was not my first marriage. But
mm-hmm.
I think my whole values of what I thought marriage was so really distorted that I wouldn't even know how to be a good wife because I was in such a destructive marriage growing up.
Yeah.
So that's why I think it was such a beautiful letter from my mother encouraging me to move on in my life and not, you know, stay where I was. And I've always treasured that card. 10 years later, I have it sitting by me as an inspiration from her. You know, 10 years after she died, but she wrote that letter, you know, 25 years ago, but it's still so meaningful to me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why sometimes, you know, what people should turn to support to their families, and even if it's not your parents, you have a sister, a brother, a cousin. You know, the worst thing is to have to feel isolated and have nobody. And you're already feeling isolated, so hopefully by going to your family, you'll get some support. Misty, I had someone who wrote us a letter and wanted some advice, and
okay.
I'll read it to you, and you can give me what your thoughts are. It says, "What words of advice and consolation would you give to a recently divorced Hispanic straight wife who hasn't had the chance to read, you know, all of your wonderful books and is currently living through the hell of a very nasty custody battle with her ex, who happens to be a Mexican immigrant, who exhibits all the markers of a closet homosexuality right down to the secret porno websites, the secret bank accounts, strange behavior, late-night drug parties with newly found male friends, etc., but actively slanders his ex-wife in front of their own 8-year-old daughter, right down to filling her head with hateful accusations that she was rotten in the bedroom. You see, my sweet, mommies and daddies are supposed to love each other in their bedroom, but your mommy caused me to hate her and all women, so I'd rather be with men now. And to boot, he libels his stepsons with the police or their high school teachers, though they have told their mother that their former stepfather molested and abused them as youngsters, and then try to buy their silence with expensive gifts or feeding their curiosity with subscriptions to naughty websites and magazines. So what can you possibly say to this particular straight wife who is presently going through this hell?
Wow.
That's a letter sent to us from Mexico.
Wow.
So, I mean, I don't know what we can tell her, except that she has to be strong.
Strong.
And try to isolate that 8-year-old daughter away from that husband. Wouldn't you say so?
Absolutely. I would say yes, yes. There's a few things going on there that I think she can do, even though it sounds like that letter, there's quite a few things out of her control. There may be a few things she can do. And that being, one, like you said, you know, document anything you can in terms of what the father's telling the daughter negative about the mother. That's not good. That's a prime example of how I say, you know, and how I see parents letting the child bear the burden of the pain of the marriage. That's not right. So obviously she can't control what he's going to tell the daughter. However, I'm sure there are agencies that she can go to seek some type of counseling for the daughter, possibly get these things on record, because that doesn't sound like a good situation. Get an outside person involved. Therefore, that person should be, a professional should be less biased. And hopefully the ex-husband wouldn't take it as threatening as he would from the ex-wife. The other thing I would suggest to do, well, first of all, that's really important because the child's health, welfare, and being is just of utmost importance. You have to protect your children,
mm-hmm.
you know, from that type of slander. You know, that's terrible. And, you know, like we said earlier, it's not just with gay husbands. It's with straight husbands that do that stuff, too. So protect your children when those things happen. Second thing would be is she's going to have to take care of herself. That's something she is in control of. She really needs to start a path to learning how to love herself, learning how to untangle the truth from fiction, especially if she has built up a lot of residue from the marriage, and she probably has because we know most straight women do. So untangle fact from fiction. Start on a healing path, taking care of yourself. Taking care of yourself begins with self-care. That's so important. You know, make sure you're eating right. Make sure you're drinking plenty of water. Make sure you're not, if you're prone to overindulge in liquor or drugs or things like that, don't. Now's not the time to do that because Bonnie, you and I both know that's the worst time to start something such as that.
I was going to suggest that you move to the Appalachian Mountains where your friends are.
Now, what's that? Do what?
You should move to the Appalachian Mountains.
Get away
from him.
To get away? Yeah, that would be they should probably be well protected. If it, you know, when they accept you in, everyone will stand up for everyone, that's for sure. So, yeah, and just make sure she takes care of herself and learns how to love herself and learns what a healthy relationship is. And that's going to take work within. The first person she needs to have a relationship now is with herself.
Mm-hmm.
And I say get support. Don't try this alone, you know. There's lots of great self-help books out there, but join some type of support network. I think it's so important.
Now, Misty, also in our chat room, and we forgot to bring it up last week, we were talking about different ways that women can refocus themselves. And...
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, one of the ways was by having a theme song. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. When working with my clients, you know, oftentimes they can't say the words they feel like they need to. And that happens with a lot of situations that are traumatic. And discovering you're in a gay straight marriage, it certainly can be traumatic. So oftentimes their brain, we just don't know what to say anymore. We don't know. We know what we're thinking, but we cannot put a word to it. And I have a background as a expressive art therapist. So when you look at all the different modalities of art, they're very healing. And one of those that fits in the category of expressive art is music. Music is very, very healing. Music can really put voice and words to something that you don't know how to say. So when I work with women, I always encourage them, after we get a few sessions going on, it sounds so simple, but I encourage them to pick out a theme song. To pick out a theme song that says to you that you love yourself, you know, you're creating this wonderful relationship with yourself, you have this wonderful future, and play that song, because we're so apt to get down in these types of situations, and music can lift you up. Now, don't be picking those George Jones crying songs. You know what I mean? We don't want any of those. None of those.
You mean Alone Again Naturally?
Pardon?
You mean like Alone Again Naturally?
There you go. Or just, you know, one of
those. Or All By Myself.
Yeah, I'm just crying in my beer, you know, all that stuff. You know, no, those are not allowed. But pick an upbeat song, a band that you really resonate with. One of my favorite bands is Coldplay. I love their music. So when I'm, you know, when I'm down or I'm stressed, it's the first thing I reach for. Okay, I got to turn my Coldplay music on. Their music speaks to me. So find a band. Find a, you know, lyrics that speak to you. Make sure it's up. None of that whining, crying, he stole my man music. That's just not allowed. Because music really triggers things. And that brings up a little bit more of a topic here, Bonnie. You know, don't be surprised, like, when you hear music during this process, you know, during your healing process, if it brings a tear to your eye or you start crying and you don't know why. It's because we associate a lot of things with music, too. So don't be picking out those songs that make you feel sad. Find yourself a theme song for healing. That's what I call it. Pick out that song, buy it on a CD, buy it on iTunes, put it on your iPod, put it on your phone, let it be the ringtone, whatever it is. Let that song remind you that you are on the road to healing, and let that song put voice to the words you feel. And it's so important. It's so simple, but it's so important.
And I agree. I'm a very big music person in the sense that I sing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in my office, when people would, you know, ever come in, I'd give them the words and pull up the music, make them sing with me. And it really sets a different tone for people when you say, "Hi, come into the office and let's sing a song." So either they run out thinking that I'm crazy, or they actually kind of like the oldies with me. And especially when I have the words printed, and then they say, "Well, I can't sing." And I said, "Well, so what? Just sing it and have fun." And it really does, you know, really uplift people. So I certainly know. What is your theme song, Misty?
Oh, my gosh. I have so many. I'm going to have to narrow it down to, I like all Coldplay's music. Their beat is just so upbeat. And it just has such a good rhythm to it for me. Now, mind you, that's not for everyone else. Another song that I absolutely love, I went to a Black Eyed Peas concert. And I'm terrible with names. Is it What a Feeling, I think, or something like that they sing? It was priceless to be there. Feel that song, hear it. It's just wonderful. So, you know, music is very, very touching. Music is one of those things that, I think, reaches the depths of our soul, just like different forms of art does, because music is a form of art. And I love that song. I love all Coldplay. So those are my upbeat music that I need. You know, when I need some, hear some good upbeat stuff, those are the first things I turn to, Black Eyed Peas or Coldplay. Those are my favorites. So, you know, I love them.
How does
and
this song
just
sound?
Changes my mood.
Wait a minute.
That's it.
This is Black Eyed Peas, I Got a Feeling.
I Got a Feeling. I'm glad everyone can't see me dance right now, Bonnie. You're making me dance.
Go ahead, Misty. You can dance.
I'm dancing. Okay.
I can't say I've ever heard the song. But it's very sexually provocative on the YouTube. I can see why you would like this. I can see why. I could fantasize myself being in that video too, Misty.
Okay.
I would definitely have a feeling. But I think it's a great idea. Whatever it is, you know, it's so funny because I used to watch the show when it was on. It was like my favorite show, Ally McBeal. Did you ever see that?
Yes, I remember that show. Yeah.
And, I mean, Ally was a little quirky. She worked in a law firm. And they were always singing and bursting into song. But I'll never forget there was one issue with Tracy Ullman, who's a really great comedian.
Oh, she
and
is funny.
Tracy Ullman played her psychiatrist, and when Ally McBeal went there for her, for you know, to get therapy, she was saying to her, "You have to have a theme song." And so Ally McBeal looked at her so strangely, and she just burst out into song, singing the song Tracy, dancing all over the place. And she really held Ally McBeal accountable the following week. You know, she said, "I want to know what your theme song is. You have to come back here with a theme song. You can't leave without a theme song." So I think it's really true that people need to have a theme song to really get them through the day. And, you know, just to make it like their mantra, something upbeat and positive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it really makes a big difference for people in, you know, how they view life. That when all crap is surrounding you, you can pull yourself out and think about something cheerful and upbeat. And try to get a little detached from what your life is until you can get out of it. So I think the theme song is great. And if any of you do have a theme song or you'd like to think about it, you're always welcome to call us at 646-716-4893. I just would like to talk a little bit about my newsletter that came out this week. Because, you know, everything I write always ends up having some controversy to it. And you know, for
not
better
you,
or for worse. Huh?
You don't have any controversy, do you?
No, I don't. No, not okay. Me. It's the people who read it.
Oh.
There's nothing controversial, I feel. It's just how
absolutely.
They feel.
It's yeah, their just, problem, their fault.
That's how I look at it. I just never quite get it. Like, what's so controversial about anything? I mean, I think it's pretty clear cut. But I was, you know, very fortunate. Once a year, I do like to devote my newsletter now to men and to the gay fathers who are, you know, really good fathers, you know, to be role models to others. And this particular Father's Day tribute, you know, I dedicated to my friend Doug, who is a wonderful, wonderful man. Doug does my male, gay male husband counseling, and he's totally giving of himself and always willing to help others. And I asked him if he would be willing to answer the 12 questions that women write to me the most. You know, the 12 things that baffle them the most or that they can't understand. So I thought, you know, might want to talk a little bit about these questions, Misty. And he gave me the perspective from a gay man. So maybe you can give me your perspective from a gay woman after I read you what he says.
Okay.
How's that?
That sounds good. I'm ready to go.
Okay, the first question I presented to Doug was my husband gay when he married me? And, you know, Doug said science has still not determined why some people are gay, but the research since the 1970s has focused on genetic and or biological factors. It appears that our sexuality is hardwired in our brain before we are born. It occurred throughout the world in all cultures, and it's been observed in over 100 species. Researchers have also identified structural differences in the brains of gay and straight men. In addition, all those old psychoanalytical theories about an absentee or ineffective fathers and dominant mothers have also been disproved. Whether we are gay or straight, it appears that is determined sometime while we are developing as a fetus. Was I gay when I married my wife? Absolutely. I was gay the day I was born, but no one in my family knew it or suspected it, including me. So how do you feel about that?
Very touching. I think that's, I have to agree pretty much completely with his answers. I remember back in the early 90s, I was going to University of Kentucky getting my psychology undergraduate degree, and I was taking a lot of different biology classes and, of course, psychology classes. Some of the classes I I was taking in the Freudian base. And of course, I was getting two different messages. And some of those classes I were getting, how that, you know, at that point in time, homosexuality was still listed in the DSM, which is the Diagnostical Statistical Manual for all of you therapists out there that use that to diagnose people. So back in like the 80s and 90s, that was, and I don't remember when that was taken out, but I remember it was still in when I was in, at University of Kentucky.
Yeah, I think I'll address that in a later question coming up about the DSM.
Oh, and then over in my biology classes, I was getting completely different answers. I was getting things how that they were just discovering how different structures in the brain was completely different in gay versus straight people. And I always found it very interesting and intriguing. And for some reason, I held on to that all those years. I remember those classes, and I held on to finding the differences because at the time, I was always suspecting that my then husband was gay while I was attending the University of Kentucky. So those answers helped me by taking those classes, and I have to agree. I think, I don't know, I mean, anyone can argue this. I don't know when it began. I just think that it is set, and when it's set, you know, it becomes not a choice. It becomes, it's who you are. So mm-hmm. I like his answer there. I really do.
All right. Well, the second question I posed to him was, excuse me, did my husband know he was gay when he married me? And Doug answered, the answer to that question depends on how one defines gay and straight. There is a difference between sexual orientation and sexual identity. Sexual orientation is based on our natural sexual attractions and responses toward the same or opposite gender, and it does not change over time. There has never been any documented cases of anyone who changed his sexual orientation. Even the reparative ministry folks do not claim to be able to change someone's natural attractions and desires. But sexual identity is based on how we perceive ourselves, and that self-concept does change as we gain experience and become aware of our natural feelings and responses. For example, I knew I was attracted to other guys during my teen years and young adulthood, but the attraction was just physical. I had no interest in any kind of emotional relationship with another male. Therefore, I did not define myself as being gay. My concept of the average gay man was shaped by a culture that failed to show me any positive gay relationships and treated them as perverts and felons. Remember, it was only a few years ago that the Supreme Court struck down felony offenses for consensual gay sex. And in most states in America, it's still legal to discriminate against gay people in employment and public accommodations. The only images I had of gay men were those who were gender nonconformists, males who outward behavior and interests were feminine, and those who were shunned as outcasts in our society. That was not how I saw myself. I saw myself as an average guy who was in a heterosexual marriage. Even though I knew that I found some guys attractive and had natural sexual feelings for them, I did not view that as being homosexual. Like most husbands in these situations, I had limited sexual experience when I married, and I married when I was young. I believe that those homosexual feelings and desires were probably present in most men, but the average guy was able to suppress those feelings and form a love bond with a woman, get married, and have children. Like most gay men who marry women, I didn't define gay in terms of sexual attractions. I define gay and straight in terms of emotional attachments and or outward masculine behavior. I couldn't see myself ever loving another man, and I wasn't into cross-dressing or other overt feminine behavior. I couldn't even imagine it. I never met two guys who loved each other, so I had no role models to compare with. The only way that I knew how to live was to love a woman and marry her and have kids. There were no other options in life. How do you feel about that?
Well, the first thing that comes up to me is sad. It's really sad because I think Doug's response to that to a lot of straight women's husbands that we work with. Like we've talked about before on this show, you know, oftentimes these men are not getting married out of trickery. You know, try to find a place where you can go back and see and understand, because as a straight wife, we do need to try to understand this as much as we can because it hurts us. It's a very painful situation. So I think it's very interesting how that he pointed out that we didn't have gay role models as, you know, as basically someone to look up to or as a mentor. You know, especially if he, I think he said, as you read, he wasn't into being overtly feminine, and he didn't identify with the gay men that he did see possibly on television, Hollywood, or actors portrayed in those stereotypes. So I think it's sad that there's not that out there. And also, you brought up the reparative therapy. I think that's very interesting to look at in that answer as well, because you and I both know I'm so glad that people are realizing that these are not choices. You know, your sexuality is not a choice, but you do have choices as a person. You know, how you're going to handle who you are.
I agree with you 100%.
Such a wonderful answer. And you know what I wish when you read that? I wish I had gotten this newsletter back in probably the early 1990s. That's what I wish. Because this would have answered a lot of things for me.
And I think Doug really clarifies things so well.
Mm-hmm.
The next question I asked him is, did my husband really love me when he married me, or was he trying to escape who he was? And he responded, we all read accounts about gay Hollywood stars who entered marriage as a convenience. They didn't really love their wife. It's an arrangement made by the studio execs or their managers to squash rumors of homosexuality. Being gay in Hollywood is still pretty much a career capper. Ditto for politicians. Former Governor James McGreevy knew he was gay, but got married because he needed a cover. In his book, he admitted he knew he could not have a successful political career without a wife. So he married twice to protect his political career. But that's not the case in most of the gay married guys I've met and coached. In fact, most of the husbands describe their marriage in terms of soulmate and best friend. Part of the reason that these marriages were so difficult and painful is because the relationship between the gay man and his wife is so very close. I'm not surprised. If the brain science is correct, our brain is almost similar to those straight women. I have skill sets most resembling those of women. We still have the same high language skills and intuition and empathy. Why should it then be a surprise that we form very close relationships with women? In some ways, we are like the sister our wife always dreamed of having. It is much easier to end a marriage when two people have simply fallen out of love. It is far more difficult and painful to end that marriage when you still love each other, but you know that it cannot work. You're not just losing a spouse, you're losing the best friend you ever had. What do you think about that answer?
Wow. As you read that, I envisioned, I wish that's the way that my marriage had unfolded and then ended. It was
mm-hmm.
clear that, you know, possibly there could have been some friendships there intact and things like that would have been nice. Unfortunately, as I've voiced on this show before, there was a lot of abuse in my marriage. So none of that really, I didn't get to feel any of that. I didn't get to feel the closeness or I think you said something about a wife, the sister, the wife always wanted, you know, I can't identify with that because that was not my situation. But
right,
but
we have spoken to plenty of women, you know, who said they thought they were married to their best friends, right?
That's where I was headed to. A lot of the women I've worked with really echo what he has said here in this answer. They really do. My situation is different because the abuse was involved. But a lot of the women I work with do echo this. And I think for the most part, you and I have talked and even mentioned on this show tonight, I don't think these marriages are, for the most part, out of trickery. I don't think it is. I think for the most part, they think they can change themselves. They find someone they think they can love enough that will repress these feelings and actions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good, I like that answer as well. I think he's answering very honest. And like I said, this is another one I wish I would have seen, or, you know, all these answers you're reading so far, I wish I would have had this in a newsletter in the 1990s.
All right, well, the next one is, if my husband was gay, how was he able to have sex with me? Because I think that's a very common question that we run across. Women can't understand if men are gay, how are they able to make love to them, have children with them? You know, so his answer is, men and women experience sexual desire very differently. Researchers had control groups watch porn movies. Using various instruments and brain imaging, they were able to measure sexual arousal. By tracking the retina, they were able to zero in on what the subject was watching or focusing on when they became aroused. It was determined that women tend to focus on the context of the scene, the situation, the romance, and intimacy. However, gay men and straight men alike tend to focus on body parts. That probably also explains why women are twice as likely to have sex with men or women. The plumbing equipment and the visuals are not as important to them as the romance and an emotional love bond. Men, however, are highly visual and respond to visions of genital activity. In addition, a young man's body is flooded with high levels of testosterone, which amplifies emotions. One female researcher began taking testosterone injections equal to about 10% of what the average male her age would have in his system. She discontinued her experiment within just a few weeks. She responded that all of her emotions were heightened to a point where it was difficult to control them. That makes sense. All of our lives, boys have to deal with hyperactivity and out-of-control emotions. But is that testosterone that pushes us to have sex? It's the same stuff that makes us all fall hopelessly in love or lust. For most of us, in our teens and early adulthood, any sex is good. There's no such thing as unfulfilled sex at that age. The very thought of having sex resulted in arousal. So do you think that
explains
it?
I think, you know, I've got a smile on my face, not laughing at the response, just because I think he's hit it right on here. I really think that answer you just read is something good for all of our women to hear.
Mm-hmm. And we often tell that to women, that when you're in your teens or your early 20s, you know, just somebody touching you can stimulate you. And, you know, certainly I was able to stimulate my gay husband, you know, back then. I'm sure you were, too, in the, you know, those early days. Because anything can stimulate you, but it's just a matter of being able to continue doing it. Because after time, it doesn't stimulate you anymore, you know, for the men. So the next question I asked Doug was my husband fantasizing about men when he had sex with me? So, and he responded, some men do use homosexual fantasies to perform with their wife, but that was not my experience, nor does it seem to be the case in most that I've worked with. Fantasizing about a penis when you're playing with a vagina just doesn't work for most of us. If we start thinking about some guy we want to have sex with and then see our wife making love to us, it usually results in a deflated penis. Most married guys separate our two realities. We live in a heterosexual world and heterosexual marriage, and we try to play the role of the heterosexual husband and father. Our homosexual nature is assigned to an alter ego, and we keep that persona locked up in the closet until we can let it out in private or with another guy. I was sexually active with my wife up until our separation. However, for several years of our marriage, she was aware that I was also having sex with men. When I had sex with her, I was doing it for her and trying my best to please her. But it felt academic. And I was doing those things to try to please her, but when I was with a guy, whatever activity I was engaged with him was sheer lust and hunger. I wasn't doing it to please him. I was doing it to please me because I desired it. I think that's a significant difference that defines what sexual pleasure is. Are you doing it to please the other person? Or are you doing it because it turns you on and you hunger for it? As gay married men grow older, their testosterone poisoning can no longer be relied upon. The levels begin to drop in the late 20s and 30s. Now he has to rely on desire to make it work. What do you think of that answer?
Wow. I think that answer is so interesting, and what I really, as you read that, that stood out to me huge was, you know, how something to the effect how most married gay men separate the two realities, living a heterosexual, you know, to live in a heterosexual world and to play those roles of a husband and a father, and that's where I guess the relationship comes, and then, you know, they. The other side is hiding, you know, to do the homosexual side and not establish relationships necessarily. So I think that answer makes a lot of sense to me, coming from him and reading it or hearing it as a straight wife. It's very interesting. And Bonnie, as you also know, when women come to us, it makes a lot of sense because they come to us when they're in their marriage and maybe they're in their 40s or 50s. And they really sense something is really wrong because there's not been any sex for years, 10
right.
years, 12, 15 years. So I think that's really interesting how that he points out that, you know, as they get older, they have to rely more on the desire versus banking on the testosterone being there, that where they were able to perform earlier on in their earlier years.
Yeah, I think that explains a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
The next question I asked him is, why couldn't my husband be honest with me before he cheated with a man? Because I think that's a really important question. Don't you?
I do. Absolutely.
Anyway, say husbands married when they were younger and had limited or no sexual experience with other men. We try to understand our attraction to other men, but some things in life cannot be learned academically or through cognitive reasoning. Logic doesn't teach us about our sexuality. These are complex physical and emotional responses that we have to experience. But we have no personal experience to draw from, so the only way to discern whether this is some crazy fantasy or something much deeper is through experimental learning. In that type of learning process, we adjust the experience and try it again. We keep repeating variations until we are able to learn from it and answer the question about ourselves. Gay married guys are not willing to hurt their wife and family and risk destruction of their marriage over what may turn out to be, some phrase or ridiculous fantasy. We're not about to do that when it's just possible that we could try and come away with disgust and disillusionment. It's one thing to put ourselves at risk of getting emotionally hurt, but we are not willing to destroy our family without knowing the truth about ourselves. But the dilemma is that we cannot go have a full relationship with another man. He cannot experience that because he is married, so he never truly gets the answers he needs. Very frequently, it sets him up in an approach avoidance conflict where he reaches out for something but then pulls back because if he achieves what he desires, it will hurt his wife and cause him more pain and guilt, which he tries to avoid. In my own life, I search for those answers and try to find fulfillment. But I couldn't let myself fall in love with another guy and went to extremes to avoid it. That set up a sexual compulsion where I tried to use quantity as a substitute for what I really needed and desired. Until I understood that I was sabotaging myself in hopes of avoiding painful situations for her, it was a constant compulsion that preoccupied me.
Wow. I really like that response. In that he pointed out something that reminded me how that oftentimes, including my marriage and a lot of the women we work with, how that we discover that our gay husband has oftentimes lived a very promiscuous life while they've been in the marriage. And I think he pointed out something in this answer that is so important, how that just this sexual compulsion builds up, I think, from trying to repress, you know, acting on being gay and substitute the quantity of with just different men to not have that relationship
mm-hmm.
on the outside of marriage. I find that a very interesting response, a very insightful response.
Right. And I guess, you know, once again, they have two different sides of their heads going on at one time. You know, one, that stable heterosexual marriage, family, wife, and the other, you know, that those, I wouldn't even say gay life because they're not living what they consider a gay life. They're just having gay sexual encounters.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't necessarily equate that into being gay. And I know that may sound ridiculous, but I know that denial is a very deep thing. And especially, mm-hmm. you know, you don't want to lose what you have. And so you think you can balance it all. And we'll talk about that a little later when we're done Doug's list. All right. The next question was, why did he constantly blame me for his unhappiness in the marriage? And he wrote, in my own marriage, I knew that we once had been sexually happy but didn't understand why that was changing. Sex was becoming more like a duty or work for me. I saw my own struggle, working hard to keep romance and lust alive. However, I didn't see her working it at all. I felt like I was the only one working to keep the romance alive, and she just took it for granted and didn't see or appreciate what I was doing to keep it going. It was faulty reasoning. Of course, she didn't have to work at it. She loved me, and I turned her on. She didn't want anyone else. It wasn't work. It was pleasure for her. But I was wrestling, trying to stay motivated. Yes, I loved her, but I didn't desire her body. I desired and needed men, and I never had to work at that. It came automatically. And it just wasn't about the penis versus the vagina. She could have sex reassignment surgery and get a penis, but she would still be a woman with a penis. I desired and needed a man. No matter what she did or how hard she tried to please me, she couldn't be a man for me. But at the same time it was happening, all I could see was that somehow I used to be motivated to have sex with her, and now I was struggling and having to work at it. But I didn't see her putting the same amount of work effort that I was. I remember thinking if only she would be more aggressive in bed, or be more spontaneous and take the initiative. If only she would find more ways to turn me on. The if only kept coming up until I finally hit the truth. If only she was a man.
Wow. I think that last sentence you just read was very profound.
I think that pretty much says it, right?
Yeah. I think that sums it up. Yeah, if only she was a man. So I think that speaks to all straight wives out there. If, you know, especially the ones that keep trying and trying and trying. And a lot of times, I don't think, especially in the beginning stages when the straight wife discovers this or is wandering around wondering what's going on, they don't understand all the faulty reasoning that's going on. How that the gay husband can sometimes blame the wife for all these issues because they're not able to perform. They're not lusting after their wife anymore. They're not desiring their wife anymore. So I think the straight wife gets a lot of flack about that, and she tries to change herself and be someone completely different. And it's
hard. A lot, Misty. You know, especially what really happens a lot, and I know this certainly happened in my marriage, and I can speak on behalf of a lot of other women, and I think maybe you, is that after you have enough sexual rejection, you just stop asking.
Oh, yeah.
Because you just don't feel worthy enough to, you know, and feel belittled by this.
Absolutely. When it has nothing to do with someone's femininity or not being desirable enough, that sentence was so profound. It was only if she was a man. She's not a man. We straight wives are not men.
And because of that, they're going to look to find fault.
Absolutely.
Next, we asked him, my husband said that I didn't want to have sex enough, so he turned to men. Is that true? Well, that's kind of like that letter from, you know, a Mexican woman who's having that problem. And he wrote, this is another if-only excuse. Quantity is sometimes used as a coping strategy to keep a guy's mind off of sex. He figures if he keeps himself sexually satiated, he won't think about sex and won't be driven to have sex with men. He figures it's her job to keep his sexual energy drained, and that way he won't fantasize about guys or desire to have sex with them. But I learned that staying sexually drained might keep my mind off sex temporarily, but it still wasn't going to get me what I needed to be happy. Any comments?
Wow, I think he summed it up well. He's really enlightened me to a different perspective on some of this stuff, you know, and I think it's so good as a straight wife myself and working with the women to read these answers and to hear these answers because it really can put it in a different perspective, especially, and you know, Bonnie, this is a question that I had, when I started working with straight wives, I never imagined how often I would hear this comment, you know, my husband blames me for him being gay because I wouldn't have sex with him enough.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear that it may sound funny or odd to other people, but that is such a common question. This is a question I never dreamed of being approached with so often as a straight wife coach. Never imagined. It's very common. These women,
You know, and it's like dancing inside the circle of crazy that we talk about on here. When you dance inside long enough, you start believing things that are not true. And this is one of those things. Don't believe that your lack of sexual activity with your gay husband made him gay. It's the other way around. Your gay husband's not having sex with you because he's just not attracted to you. It goes back to the answer before. Only if you were a man. You're not a man.
Exactly. Well, the next question was, my husband says he's bisexual. Does that mean he can stay happy with me without having sex with a man? Because a lot of times I have women write to me, you know, in their false hope of that word bisexuality, which always gives women that false sense of hope that you can come before the man, which never works. But he wrote, for the most part, bisexuality among adult men tends to be a transitional state. When you look at the statistics by age group, those who identify themselves as being bisexual tend to be in the late adolescent years or early 20s. As we humans sexually experiment and learn about ourselves, we tend to change our bisexual self-identity to that of heterosexual or homosexual. By the time we are in midlife, the number of people identifying as bisexual drops dramatically. In my own case, I identified as being bisexual for several years because I loved my wife and was sexually active with her, but at the same time, I was sexually attracted to men, though I had no interest in a love relationship with a man. So I didn't seem to fit into either the heterosexual column or the homosexual column, but as I learned more about me and experimented with men physically and emotionally, it became clear that I was predominantly sexually and emotionally attracted to men. I had been subconsciously trying to avoid emotional bonds with men because I instinctively knew that it would be a life-altering experience that would threaten my self-concept in my marriage. I could have sex with men, but as long as I didn't love them, I wasn't gay. Inevitably, however, I met a man who I fell deeply in love with. I had an emotional response that I never knew existed. That deep feeling of deep love has an obsessive-compulsive quality to it, is something I never knew existed. I have never experienced it in my life until he came along. The feelings were so deep and overwhelming that it instantly destroyed any self-concept of bisexuality. I wasn't caught in the in-between world of loving a woman and yet being physically drawn to men. I was fully engulfed in physical and emotional desire for another man. I couldn't possibly be any more gay, not by the stretch of the definition.
Wow. I think that's a very interesting definition of bisexuality. I think he's spot on in that answer. You know, a lot of people believe that bisexuality exists, and then a lot of people believe it don't exist. And I like how he puts the answer up there to how it tends to be transitional state. So, Bonnie, you and I both know, for the women we work with, when the husbands tell them or when they're discovered that they're bisexual, they're not gay, I think it does offer them that false hope. And what I tell women, well, you know, if he's identifying as bisexual, is he desiring you? If he's bisexual, he should, you know, by definition, he should be desiring you as well.
I don't agree with Duggan on this, and this is really the only thing, because, I mean, I certainly understand everything where it's coming from. Because he writes, as we humans sexually experiment and learn about ourselves, we tend to change our bisexual self-identity to that of heterosexual or homosexual. See, I'm just not sold on that one, Misty. I think if a man is experimenting with another man, he's just not going to be straight.
I haven't seen that happen. I try to stay away from the never word that never exists, you know, because usually then I find a situation where it's a possibility. But I completely understand where you're coming from. I tend to believe if someone's experimenting with the same sex attraction, I tend to believe they're going to fall in the gay category. That's what I tend to believe is going to be. Like 99.9% of the time, I just don't really see it happening.
Right, I'm not
going to
say 100% because, you know, there's something that I term situational gay.
Mm-hmm.
A situational gay situation would be, for instance, if a man is in prison.
Yes.
And I certainly know men who were in prison who had gay sex, because there was nobody else there to have sex with. However, that wasn't their orientation, and when they came out of jail, they never thought about it again.
Right.
I just don't feel that, unless you're in a prison situation where there's not a woman in sight, that most, I really don't know any straight men, you do, please let me know, who are really heterosexual relation, you know, heterosexually oriented, who are experimenting with men.
Right, and I think one thing, this makes me think about what happens to a lot of our women, and it just complicates their grief process even more. And like when they do discover that their husband is gay, and their husband tells them, no, I'm bisexual, I'm not gay, yet they're only having sex with men while they're married. And then they go through the divorce process, and then months later or maybe a year or so later, their ex-husband is marrying another straight woman. And that just confuses our women so much in terms of thinking. Then they think, oh, well, maybe he was bisexual. Well, oftentimes those marriages end in divorce, too, because then the woman realizes that things are wrong in that marriage. You know,
exactly.
Things are not going how she thought it would be with, you know, a heterosexual couple should be. So, yeah,
I think bisexuality in some men's minds, especially if you ever read the boards, you know, in the post from the bi married men boards, which, you know, can really make you ill. A lot of men justify that they're bisexual because, first of all, they like the way that sounds better than saying gay. You know, it's a lot more trendy. It's not like committing yourself. And also in their own heads, they, you know, justify it by saying, well, I have a wife and I'm married. How can I be gay?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't even matter that they're not having sex with their wives. They're finding excuses why they're not doing that. They're only having sex with men, but they still would rather say they're bisexual.
Exactly. They're letting a piece of paper that is a marriage contract state that they are bisexual. That's how they're maintaining being straight, so they don't identify with the gay part, when we know that marriage contract that you've made with a woman is not what defines you as being gay or straight or bisexual. It's who you identify with sexually. So I think they find lots of reasons and justifications to ignore using that gay word. And I think that would be a hard word to use, especially in our society. I can understand where the hardness comes in there of not being able to use that word because there's so much judgment placed on it.
I agree. Now the question is, now that my husband has found his new life, why does he treat me like an enemy? And he wrote, as I pointed out earlier, these mixed orientation marriages tend to be extremely close. It is easy to walk away from someone with whom we have fallen out of love. Leaving someone you love feels like pulling live flesh from your body. It's very common for the husband and or the wife to assign blame to each other and treat each other badly as a means of making it easier to let go. Also, he has been struggling with his sexuality for a long time. There has been an internal war going on, an identity crisis. Eventually, he hates the situation he is in and it doesn't seem like he'll ever be able to be happy and fulfilled, because for most of his life, he stifled his own needs to maintain his dysfunctional marriage. But eventually, the disdain he has for the marriage becomes personified, and he begins to see his wife as a block to his path of self-actualization and happiness. Subconsciously, he begins to feel as if his wife is the warden and he's the prisoner. When it reaches that point, any attempt at showing him love is rebuffed. The experience has taught me that people can love us, but if that love is not coming from someone we love, it doesn't feel like love at all. It feels like we are being stalked. But it need not go from a love relationship to a hate relationship. Many couples find ways to stay friends and co-parent their children. My advice is not to wait until you both become bitter and cynical. Have the courage and grace to admit that the marriage cannot work. Have the caring and love to go on and help each other find someone else who can give them love that you cannot give each other. Hold on to the good memories and hold on to the respect for each other. But let go of the impossible marriage. You are doing no favors to yourselves or to your spouse or children in clinging to a marriage that is dysfunctional and failing. But know that the situation is not caused by the wife. It didn't happen because you weren't sexy enough or because you weren't aggressive enough. It happened because he is gay, and despite all the years of war within himself, he cannot change it no matter how much he loves you or how much you love him.
Wow. Well, once again, I think he's given another great answer to a question that we hear a lot. And, you know, wouldn't it be wonderful if these marriages would end or dissolve before they got so bitter and so mean? And people, it's harder to move on when you start attacking each other. Because then, you know, people want to get revenge. I think that's in our human nature. You know, if we feel like we've been wrong, then we want to seek revenge. And then, you know, that just snowballs the whole situation and makes it such a terrible situation for everyone involved. It's hard to take what I call the high road when you are involved in a relationship where, you know, you're constantly being put down. You're constantly thinking that something's wrong with you. And it's hard to move on out of these marriages. It's really, they're so difficult.
I think the one line that was so profound in that particular statement was when he said, "The experience has taught me that people can love us, but if that love is not coming from someone we love, it doesn't feel like love at all." So
yeah.
I think that has to be like a really awakening statement to women, that no matter how much you love your husband, no matter how much you think you're doing for him, no matter how good of a wife you are, he really doesn't care. I mean, it just makes him feel more resentful. Like Doug says, it feels like we are being stalked. You know, like we're trying to keep them somewhere where they don't belong or don't want to be. So I think that's really profound. This one says, "My husband tells me that he's gay because he was sexually molested when he was younger. He claims this is a learned behavior and that he can unlearn it with therapy and support. Is that true?" And he wrote, "This is the favorite fodder for anti-gay groups, anti-gay religious groups such as the Family Research Council or North. These organizations tout statistical studies that report that gay men are more likely to have been molested by adult males as children and therefore jump to the conclusion that childhood sexual experience with males causes homosexuality. It begs the question, is heterosexuality caused by sexual molestation by someone of the opposite sex? But seriously, the statistics they cite are erroneous or taken out of context. It is true that gay men are more likely to report sexual experiences with adults when they are under the age of 16. But in the majority of those cases, one study reports it is 68%, they had already self-identified as being gay before the molestation had occurred. A closer look at those suspect statistics reveals definitions that became problematic. A boy of 15 who has a sexual experience with a boy of 18 would have fallen within the definitions of having been molested. But most of us would not view sex between a 15-year-old and an 18-year-old as a predator molestation. This is what the American Psychological Association had to say about it in May 2000. No specific psychosocial or family dynamic cause for homosexuality has been identified, including histories of childhood sexual abuse. Sexual abuse does not appear to be more prevalent in children who grow up and identify as gay, lesbian, or bisexual than in children who identify as heterosexual. The National Organization on Male Sexual Victimization stated in 2004, "While there are different theories about how sexual orientation develops, experts in the human sexuality field do not believe that premature sexual experiences play a significant role in late adolescence or adult sexual orientation." Sexual abuse can interfere, and Doug goes back to saying, "Sexual abuse can interfere with a person's sexual enjoyment, may even contribute to a condition referred to as homosexual obsessive compulsive disorder, in which a person keeps checking to reassure himself that he's not gay. But childhood sexual abuse does not create a person's deepest passions, attractions, and desires." Do you agree with that?
Yes, I really like his answer to this because, as you know, Bonnie, we get a lot of straight women that come to us, and they come to us in terms of feeling so sorry for their gay husband, and that's fine because, you know, we realize some of the hardships that do come along with identifying as being gay. But what really bothers me is when these women come to us and they come to us because they've been told that their husband's gay because they've been molested as a child,
And we know that that's not the case. And I'm not trying to discount children that are molested. I think that's one of the worst crimes any human being can commit on the face of this earth to a child, to an innocent child. It's horrible. It's horrific. However, I agree with what he says. I don't believe, and he, backed it up with some things you were reading, that with some arguments from different research bodies that state and show that, we don't believe this is the case. That doesn't set someone's sexuality.
And I'm going to take it one step beyond that. I mean, I know that some people are going to be upset when I say this, but in my heart, I truly believe that some of these men, not all, but some of these men use what I call the abuse excuse for being gay, because mm-hmm. they're able to make their wives feel sorry for them that way, that they know
yeah.
very well they haven't been abused. Because it's funny how when I talk to gay men who are what I call gay, honestly gay, they've lived their whole lives being gay. They didn't
mm-hmm.
have to marry to prove that they're gay. They knew they were gay, and they just lived a gay life. And I talked to them about the abuse situation. I don't think in any one case anybody ever said to me, I was molested as a child. But I hear it far too frequently
wow.
from the men who are married to women. And I really do believe in my heart that a lot of this never even happened. That, they think it's a good way to get the wife to feel sorry for them or to accept it. So, but that's my feeling. Anyway, the last question. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Another
go ahead.
Thing to add to it briefly is, and sometimes these men live such double lives. I think sometimes they come to believe stuff. And sometimes they believe things happen to them or things, and I think it's true to them sometimes. They think they create a reality that's true to them. And I'm not trying to discount any type of abuse or molestation here, because it doesn't deserve to be discounted. But I agree, a lot of these women, they take this to heart, and then they take on the responsibility of
exactly.
trying to repair
this. Exactly, trying to cure their husband.
Mm-hmm.
And, when the husbands beg them, look, it's not, I can help it, I was abused as a child, please give me another chance, I can change. And
mm-hmm.
they feel sorry for them, and they look to understand that abuse. And they insist to me that, their husbands would have never been gay if they hadn't been sexually abused.
Mm-hmm. And when your husband says that, march them right to a therapist's office immediately. Help them get the help they need if they've been molested. And also make sure that therapist can help them untangle their current life and their past, how that could influence it.
Mm-hmm.
Let them get the help they need for that.
Okay, and the last question I asked was, what do you suggest about telling the children? Because we know that is the number one biggest controversy.
Yep.
About telling the children.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me what you think of Doug's answer for that. He says, I think the answer to that depends on the age of the children. Generally speaking, kids don't want to hear about anything sexual associated with their parents. It conjures up images of what mom or dad does between the sheets. There's a strong yuck factor to it. Husbands and wives divorce every day, but they don't usually share their bedroom disappointments with their children. That being said, if dad has found a male partner or if other solutions arise that make it necessary to have that conversation with the kids, I believe it should be couched in terms of affection and love rather than complicated and ambiguous labels. Children understand love and affection, but terms such as sexual orientation are generally beyond their level of comprehension. Unless they are in their late teens, anything about their parents that includes the word sexual is toxic. Wherever possible, the child should be given the support he or she needs to cope with the knowledge that they have a gay parent. If a child shares that information with friends, they can quickly become the target of mean-spirited taunts. I urge parents to work with a therapist or family counselor in discussing this with kids, and I recommend they also have a conversation with the school counselor so the kids have someone supportive they can turn to at school.
Wow. I think that's a good answer. And I don't know if that answer fits every situation, because we know situations with children are always unique. Sometimes I think it's best to tell the children.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I think it's best to withhold the information for a bit. It depends on the maturity level of your child, not necessarily the age level of your child. And I think it is best when both parents and tell the child. And, you know, because I've come from the background that honesty is the best policy. I think if you keep something hidden and secret, children are very intuitive little beings. They pick up that something's not just right, that you're keeping something from them, even though they may not know what it is. And here's my greatest concern in keeping this type of information from a child. You and I both know oftentimes in gay straight marriages, not only will the dad be gay, but if there's several children, sometimes you're going to have a gay child. So you want to promote secretiveness in that child and them not being able to come to tell you what's going on so you can be supportive of your child if he or she is gay. So you've got to really think about those things before you sit your child down and talk to them and tell them things. And, you know, once upon a time, I taught school. I taught high school. And children can be very mean to other children. So you have to handle this with what I would call kid gloves. Assess your situation. All situations are unique. And ideally, sit down with your gay ex-husband, or if you're separated, or however it is, and work this out. See how you want to sit down and explain it. So children are resilient.
I do believe that the best, you know, way to handle it is with both parents together.
Absolutely.
You know, absolutely handle it, and in a sensitive, you know, positive way. But if both of them can handle it, you know, I know there are men who will say, do not tell, you know, make sure that, you know, you keep your mouth shut. I don't want the kids knowing this. But I really don't feel you have to live in your husband's closet. And, you know, at a certain point, I'm not saying when they're 10, but as they're getting older, what they're seeing, what messages they're getting, when the time mm-hmm. will come, I mean, they need to be told. You know,
yeah.
They can't, because eventually they're going to know anyway. Kids usually know long before we know. They're so sophisticated
mm-hmm.
today. And, mm-hmm. you know, you don't want your child to be that victim of that internal battle of I know something and I have to keep it a secret from my mom, or I don't want to ruin my parents' marriage. You know, it's really being detrimental to them. So I really think the sooner the children know, you know, and if it's done in a sensitive, caring way, you know, it could really work well. So those are my thoughts on that. So, Misty, we only have 2 minutes left. We've used up our whole time tonight. And I want
wow.
to thank Doug so much. If anybody would like a copy of Doug's answers in my newsletter or to be added to my monthly newsletter list, please write to me at bonkay@aol.com. That's B-O-N, like in Nancy, K-A-Y-E. @AOL.com, and I'll be happy to send you that copy of Doug's newsletter and our June newsletter, and also put you on my monthly mailing list. So any last-minute workshops you want to talk about, Misty, before we close?
Sure. July is going to be a very busy month, so I encourage anyone that's interested in knowing about the workshops, Saturday seminars, or one-on-one life coaching that I offer, please shoot me an email or Bonnie an email. My email address is Misty Lynn Hall, MistyLynnHall, @AOL.com. And what's coming up is the Saturday seminar I have coming up on July the 10th. It's always the second Saturday of the month. It's spirituality and healing. I think this is for me, this is one of the most important decisions I made in my process of recovery, is to refill my spirit. And I'm not speaking from a religious sense. I'm speaking from a soul sense. What did it take to recharge me, refill me? Because, as you know too, Bonnie, I think all of us numb ourselves, and we walk around this hollow, empty, spiritless shell
mm-hmm.
when we're trying to make it through these marriages. So that's what this is about. And, you know, religion may fill your spirit. So I'm not saying in that respect that's not what it's about, but it's not like a denominational type church service. When I'm speaking of spirituality and healing, I'm speaking of a soul level. What can you do to heal yourself from a soul level? And I encourage you to join this. I think it's going to be a wonderful class. I've gotten a lot of interest from it already from your newsletter. Another one I'm going to offer, I'm trying something new this month. We'll see how it goes. The self-esteem seminar I offered last month, it got rave reviews. And I had a lot of people that were not able to make it. I know Saturday is a hard time for some people. So what I'm going to start doing, and I'm going to see how this works. If you're interested,
I'm sorry, Missy. We'll have to save that till next week because we're going to be cut off in a second. But anyway, write to us, and we'll tell you all of Misty's plans and the workshops that you can attend. So we would like to say goodnight to all of our listeners. Thank you so much for listening to us and making us a really popular show. We're getting notices all over now, and we hope that this has helped you. And we send our love to you for the week. Right, Misty?
Love to everyone and to all, and happy Father's Day to all.
Yes, and get that theme song going. Good night.
Absolutely. Good night. Bye-bye.